What happens when the justice system fails those who need it most? In the shadowy corners of grief, ordinary people can transform into monsters of their own making. Two strangers meet and make a deadly pact. I'll kill for you if you kill for me. This premise might echo Hitchcock's Strangers on a Train, but Steve Cavanagh elevates it with modern psychological depth and unexpected twists that force us to question how far we might go when the system fails us. What begins as a seemingly straightforward revenge agreement spirals into a labyrinth of manipulation, mistaken identity, and moral compromise. Can justice exist outside the law? And at what point does the pursuit of vengeance transform the victim into something worse than their tormentor? Amanda White's life collapsed when her 6-year-old daughter Jess was murdered. Despite security footage showing wealthy stockbroker Wallace Crone with Jess before her abduction, his father's connections helped dismiss the charges. The judicial system, designed to protect the innocent, instead shielded the guilty through legal technicalities and privilege. The novel opens with Amanda sterilizing a .22 revolver in her baby's old bottle sterilizer, a haunting juxtaposition of motherhood and vengeance. She's lost everything, her daughter, her husband Lewis, who committed suicide after losing Jess at the park, her job, and any normalcy. Her failed attempt to shoot Crone leaves her facing probation, counseling, and a $500,000 harassment lawsuit. Amanda's descent into vigilanteism feels disturbingly relatable. When Detective Andrew Farrow, who found Jess's body and believes in Crone's guilt, tells her the case has been iced, we understand her refusal to move on. Her grief is a physical presence, with memories of Jess's stuffed unicorn sparkles and bedtime stories serving as painful reminders of all she's lost. Amanda reluctantly attends a court-mandated parental trauma group where she meets Wendy, a thin, blonde woman who smokes despite the rules. At a bar afterward, Wendy reveals herself as Naomi Cotton, whose 15-year-old daughter Rebecca was sexually abused and murdered by her music teacher, Mr. Quinn. Despite Rebecca's journal documenting the abuse, Quinn escaped justice through powerful connections. Their shared rage creates an instant bond. When Amanda discovers Naomi's office filled with surveillance photos of Quinn, she realizes they're kindred spirits, both stalking the men who destroyed their families. This leads to their agreement. Amanda will kill Quinn while Naomi kills Crone, giving each perfect alibis with no connections to their victims. The arrangement is psychologically plausible because both women have exhausted legal options and been dismissed by authorities. Both have developed obsessive behaviors that alienated them from society. Their pact offers practical advantages and psychological distance. Killing a stranger feels more like an abstract act of justice than emotional revenge. The novel excels by examining how ordinary people rationalize murder, not simply snapping, but methodically justifying each step of their descent into violence. Scott Gelman transforms from successful lawyer to desperate protector after his wife Ruth survives a brutal home invasion that left her with 17 stab wounds and unable to bear children. When Ruth identifies a man at their hotel restaurant as her attacker, Scott's protective instincts override his legal training. The confrontation turns savage as Scott straddles his attacker before stabbing down repeatedly with the broken bottle into the man's face until one eye is replaced by 4 inches of wine bottle standing upright from the socket. Drawing on his legal expertise, Scott meticulously cleans the crime scene, changes clothes, and plans their escape, his professional knowledge now weaponized for revenge. The irony is stark, a former upholder of law using that understanding to evade justice. When they later discover that Patrick Travers, the man Scott killed, was in Hawaii during Ruth's attack, the horror overwhelms him. Scott's violent reaction, punching the kitchen cabinets until his knuckles bleed, then vomiting in the sink, captures his crushing realization that he's murdered an innocent man. The novel's most shocking twist unfolds when Amanda discovers Naomi's sinister deception. After supposedly killing Crone, Naomi aggressively pressures Amanda to murder Quinn. When Amanda confronts Quinn, she injures him in self-defense after he attacks her. The next morning, Amanda's world shatters upon seeing Wallace Crone, very much alive, boarding a train. The horrifying truth emerges. Naomi fabricated the entire murder story. Amanda discovers the websites about Quinn were sophisticated forgeries, and Naomi's apartment has been completely emptied, as if she never existed. Billy Cameron, a retired Marine Corps captain, reveals that the same woman approached him months earlier as Felicia, proposing an identical murder swap. He provides documentation showing a pattern. A woman using multiple identities has been targeting grieving individuals nationwide, manipulating them into committing murders for an unknown agenda. This masterful twist forces readers to reevaluate everything. What seemed like a bond between grieving mothers is revealed as something malevolent, a calculated exploitation of Amanda's grief and rage for some mysterious purpose. As the novel progresses, Ruth undergoes the most dramatic transformation. What initially appears as PTSD reveals itself as something far more sinister. After Scott's suicide, Ruth emerges years later with a new identity and a terrifying mission. We learn that Ruth systematically manipulates vulnerable people in grief support groups, creating multiple identities to find potential pawns. Her targets are men with blue eyes resembling her supposed attacker. The revelation that she manipulated Amanda and others creates a chilling picture of calculated malevolence masked as victimhood. Ruth's deteriorating mental state becomes evident as she stalks a family whose father she believes has the same blue eyes as her attacker. Her internal monologue reveals she visualizes a mental chest containing all the blue-eyed men that threatens to break open unless she continues killing. The final revelation? That Ruth has been hallucinating her attacker's face on innocent men for years, leading to multiple murders, completes her tragic arc. Genuine trauma evolved into paranoid delusion and finally a systematic campaign of violence against innocent people sharing a physical trait with her imagined tormentor. The novel concludes with Amanda's healing journey after learning of Crone's confession to killing Jess. At Coney Island Beach, a place she once visited with Jess and Luis, she burns Billy's letter and Jess's toy unicorn sparkles in a symbolic ritual of release. As the flames change colors, Amanda briefly smells oranges and hears what sounds like a child laughing, suggesting Jess's presence and approval. Amanda finds herself finally at peace, no longer afraid or alone, reaching a bittersweet resolution. Amanda's journey reveals that while vengeance may promise closure, true healing comes from honoring what we've lost while still embracing life. The burning of sparkles represents letting go not of Jess's memory, but of the all-consuming grief that prevented Amanda from moving forward. In a world where systems often fail the vulnerable, perhaps the answer lies not in revenge, but in reclaiming our lives from grief, honoring those we've lost by living fully again, even when justice remains imperfect.